Okay, this is Bio-160, Integrated Medical Science, and my name is Dr. Gober, and we're going to meet every Tuesday and Thursday at 1 o'clock in here for about an hour and a half. And this class has homework, and we have quiz almost every week, except for a week we have tests. So there's a lot of work involved with this class, but that's really the only way to gain an understanding of this material, is to work with material. Listening to a lecture helps, but you got to spend some time on your own and work with the material. Okay. So first order of business I think I would like to attend to today is to say that the class is full, and you can maybe check back with me on Thursday. I'm going to do roll call. I'm going to pass around a sign-in sheet first thing. So if you are registered for this class, make sure you sign the sign-in sheet, because otherwise I might drop you and add some students on Thursday. So here is the sign-in sheet, and just put your last name in about the right quadrant that you have on the piece of paper right there so that I can find you pretty easily. All right, so at this point in time, my boss tells me that only, I got to make sure that only officially registered students are in class. So I can't let somebody that's not registered for class stay and attend lecture for today. But one good thing is if I do get to add somebody on Thursday, is that I record my lectures and I put them on the internet. So here's my little recorder right here. So you should be able to make up the material without too much problem, all right, if you're able to add. My guess is I probably won't really add anybody, but you just never know, okay? So people that want to add, please come back on Thursday and we'll see if we can add you. All right, but I just don't know at this point in time. Okay. All right. So if you're not officially registered in the class, please don't take a syllabus or any of the other handouts, because I'll run out. So let's see what you do first. I'm going to pass the syllabus out. I'm going to keep a copy right here, and take one, pass it back, and maybe pass it sideways. Okay. So you registered for the class?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I can't help you if you have to be in two places at one time. Okay. Take a syllabus, yeah, pass it back. Yeah. Take one, pass it sideways, and pass it back.
I registered a couple of days ago, but I don't know if I'm still in the class or not. Do you have the list of the people, maybe?
I think I do, but I don't think I have it with me. Yeah.
So I'll come back on Thursday.
Okay. Well, I tell you what, did you sign the sign-in sheet?
Oh, no.
Sign the sign-in sheet, otherwise you might get dropped.
Okay.
If you're officially registered. You know, that's closed, too. Every class is closed. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You can stop in tonight and just double-check, but I got a feeling that class is closed, too. Yeah, that's too bad. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, and then pass it back up so other students can sign in. All right, so here's the syllabus. And so you see some contact information for me and my name, my email address, my voicemail. I'm hardly ever at that telephone number, so if you have a good question and you want to ask me, you should just call, even if you're studying at like 3 o'clock in the morning, because you're just going to get my voicemail pretty much anytime you call me. So my office is in room 265. That's in the faculty office area. Sometimes I have office hours in that room. But on other days, I have my office hours in the anatomy lab, and students can come in, and that includes you. You can come in and take a look at some bones, muscle models, eyeballs, brains, whatever, when we're studying that in here, and it'll probably help you see what's going on in this particular class. So you're welcome. So that's Tuesday, Thursday, 11 to 12:20 in room SCM 335. That's the anatomy lab. So you're welcome to come just talk to me about this class, or if you want to mess around with the bones or eyeballs or whatever, you're welcome to do that. Okay, required materials. This is the textbook that we're using. All right, so this is Hull's Essentials of Human Anatomy and Physiology. This is the 10th edition, and you might have a 9th edition. That's a pretty good edition, too. But there are a lot of times, well, there are figures that I take out of the textbook and put them exactly on the test that you have to label. So I call those exam figures, but they come out of your textbook. And on the syllabus, I put the figure numbers that I like to put on the tests from this edition. And sometimes they change the numbers around from one edition to the next. Sometimes they don't. So I suppose you could use a previous edition, but you have to make sure that if I ask you to study a certain question at the end of the chapter or an exam figure, that you know how it corresponds to this textbook. Okay? Because if I say study figure 1.3, then that's the one in this book, and it might not be the same one as 1.3 that's in edition number 9 or 8 or something like that. Or it might not be labeled exactly the same way. So you might be at a little bit of a disadvantage. And then there is a student study guide that goes along with the textbook, and it's for the 10th edition. This is the previous edition, but it will have the same kind of picture on the front, like this person that's climbing on the student study guide, not the gymnast. Don't buy the books with the gymnast. And I will have questions that come out of this, and I'll put those on a quiz. So if you study the study questions from the student study guide, you should be able to do really well on the quizzes in here. And, of course, that will translate into helping you with your grade. Hi. Got a question? Quick one? Add? Ah, yeah, class is closed. Sorry. Maybe if you come back Thursday, I might have an opening if I know somebody's going to drop, if somebody lets me know. But today, no ads. Okay, good luck. All right, so what else? So you're going to need a bunch of Scantrons. Oh, I should have brought a Scantron with me to show you. You're going to need 20 882ES. That is like the long one. It's 50 questions per side. You know, it kind of looks like that. And that's actually cheaper even for the quizzes. A quiz will be 10 questions, so you're only going to use a little bit of that Scantron. But what can you do? You can flip it over and use the other side. So every Scantron you get two quizzes with. That really small Scantron will work. All right, if I set up the quizzes that way, but you have to buy a new Scantron for every quiz. So it's actually more expensive to buy the little ones than to buy a little bit more expensive big one, because the big one you can use twice. So it's cheaper to do that. All right, so since we're doing Scantrons for tests in here, including the lecture tests, they're all going to be multiple choice, matching, maybe a couple true-false, not too bad, but no written exams. There's really nothing written. So that makes it a little bit easier on you guys, I think. But since we're using Scantrons, you got to make sure that you fill it out correctly. No stray marks on the Scantron, because that's what the Scantron reader looks for, are pencil marks. And you might not get credit for a question that you answer correctly if it's got, you know, junk on the Scantron. So just make sure if you erase something, you do it really nice. So it's probably more important to get a good eraser that doesn't smudge. So before you take a quiz or a test, get your pencil out, make a line, and your eraser, and erase the line. And if the line's a smudge, throw the eraser away and get a new eraser. Most erasers that come on the top of mechanical pencils and pens are worthless. This looks like a good one. This looks like a good, nice plastic one on here, but it's not. It's a smudger, right? So make sure you get a good eraser for the test. Who's got a good eraser that they like? Anybody got one handy? Some of those that are in a little tube are nice. Some of them that are in a block are really, really nice. Okay. So then we got a little blurb of the course description. So just 3 hours. There's no laboratory, but if you want to come up and visit me in lab, anatomy lab, that will be fun for you, I'm sure. Instructional objectives, probably you should read through those. But I'm just going to read maybe the first two, maybe the first three, because that's what we're going to cover in the first part of the class. You should know and use anatomic nomenclature and definitions to describe body structure and body motions. We're going to talk about some of that kind of stuff today. Describe homeostatic control mechanisms and their roles in regulation of body functions. That's how we maintain life in our body. Your body is different than the environment. Like, can you think of one parameter inside your body that is different than inside this room right here? How are you different than the room that we're all sitting in? Temperature, perfect example. Okay? Because your temperature is way up at 98.8, 98.6, somewhere in there, but the room temperature, I'm sure, is in the 70s. Right? So you're vastly different than the room, And what homeostasis tells us is how does your body maintain things like temperature that's suitable to support life. So for instance, if your body temperature was 70 degrees, then you wouldn't be alive. Right? So homeostasis describes how we control our body so that we stay alive. And then the third one described the chemical and physical principles that underlie human physiology. That's all actually very important, fun stuff. Although you might not think chemistry, I need to have this. Is there an extra syllabus up there? Pass it down to the front. I need a syllabus down here on the front. Okay. I tell you what, just pass one down here and you guys can keep the rest up there. Yeah. All right, so if you know a little bit of chemistry and some physics, that will help you with everything. Okay. So please don't take a syllabus unless you're officially registered in the class. Okay, I have plenty to go around. Attendance, you gotta come to class. Thank you so much. And sign the sign-in sheet. So I tell you what, where's that sign-in sheet at? It's back there someplace. Hold it up. Anybody need an extra syllabus back there? We're good? I'll take them down here. Yeah, so if somebody comes in late, we can just... All right, thanks for passing those around. Make sure you sign the sign-in sheet. Last day to drop with a W is November 19th. It's a long ways off. Okay, so how do you get a grade in this class? Well, you got quizzes. And I'm going to give 14 quizzes. There might be a couple that are take-home. And other than that, you might get 10 or 12 quizzes in class right here. You get to drop two. So that's nice. And that's going to be worth 120 points, so just 10 points per quiz. So if you have to go away for a wedding, funeral, get called to active duty because something funny is happening or something one week and you miss a quiz, that will just be one that you drop. So no makeup quizzes because you get to drop so many. Tests, 5 tests throughout the semester. The final is not cumulative. It's just like a regular test, but it's going to be given during finals week, not the last week. So it's going to be during finals week, but it's still going to be just a regular test. So your total points is 620 points, and it's just going to be a 90-80-70 scale based on those points. So you can see what kind of points you need for a particular grade. Plus, since it's by points, you can calculate what your grade is at any point during the semester. Just add up all the points that you have, divide by the possible number of points that were given on a test, and then whatever percentage that is what grade that you would have if I had to give you a grade that day. All right, in this week sometime I'll set up a course for you on Blackboard so that you can get some homework assignments and check your grades and download some other materials that will be good study materials for you. And I'll show you how to get on that on Thursday. Okay. Academic honesty policy. In this class, you have to do your own work, please, on the quizzes in class and the tests in class. You could work as a collaborative effort on the take-home quizzes, I suppose. Just be mindful because sometimes I put the questions that are on a quiz on the test. So if you don't understand the quiz questions, then that will hurt you on a test. So just make sure that you can understand the questions that are on all the quizzes. All this other stuff is pretty straightforward. I think you can read it yourself. The other thing that's sort of interesting is all the way down, almost at the bottom of page 3, other important information. There, item number 4 says the instructor will record lectures and place them as a WAV file on the internet for your use anytime. Even if you're out of town, you can get them off the internet real easy. So I don't use names in here, although I might know some students by name. And it's actually fun to call somebody by their name if you know them, or nickname or whatever. But I won't do that because I'm putting that information on the internet. But some people might not, even though I'm very careful with what I say in class, might not like to have the audio files as well as the transcript of that file, which is a text file, so that you can actually read it on the internet. So if you object to me putting that information on the internet, you have to let me know in writing this week sometime. And I won't do that. If you have a real privacy concern or something, then you have to let me know. That has never happened, but it's possible. Okay, then, right at the bottom of 3, you have exam figures. and some tables that you have to know from the textbook for the test. So you see on exam one, there's a couple figures that I might photocopy from the book and put on the test. So those are the ones you have to be really familiar with. And I tell you what, that's really the easiest part of the test for most students compared to the multiple choice. So if you study those figures and understand the information in those tables, you should be able to get 100% on that part of the test, which is, I don't know, maybe 30%, 35%, maybe 40% of the test, but not as much as 50%. Okay. All right, so the very last page is the tentative class schedule. So what does that word tentative mean? It could change depending on what kind of questions we get and how fast I'm talking and all that kind of stuff. All right, so you have to come to class to see if this schedule is going to change, but this is my best guess of what we're going to cover these days. And you can see that I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 columns on this class schedule. So the first column, what do we have on the first column? Yeah, so how many weeks are we in class for? Yeah, 17 weeks. Okay. And what's the date of the last exam?
11th.
Yeah, December 11th. All right, so you're going to get a feel for how to read this table a little bit. All right, so on August 19th, what's the topic we're going to cover? August 19th is
introduction.
That's what we're going to cover today. So I'm going to have to stop talking real soon. All right, so what are we going to cover today in terms of chapters? That's the next column over. You see chapter 1. And in parentheses are the page numbers in chapter 1. And that might be all of them in chapter 1. I'm not exactly sure. Okay. And then the next column over, do we get a quiz today?
No
quiz. Do we get a test today?
No
test. And so you don't have a score to put down in that last column. But on August 21st, which is Thursday, all right, let's look under the quiz column. What do we have? The first quiz already on what chapter? The chapter's in the parentheses. Chapter 1. Okay? And that quiz is going to come directly from, that's it, the student study guide. Right here. Okay? And I have 3 copies of the textbook and 1 copy of the student study guide in the reserve section of the library. Okay? And does anybody know where that reserve section is? Who can tell me where the reserve section is? Library is that big building over here by the pond. It's on the second floor. Right over here. Yeah. Okay. You're right there. It's on the second floor. So go in the library, go up that big staircase, go up to the second floor, and as soon as you walk in through those detectors, whatever they are detecting for, right, there's a desk, and just ask to see the Bio 160 material, whatever you want, whether it's the textbook or the student study guide. And since it's in the reserve section, you can't take it out of the library. You can take it out and study it inside the library, but you can't take it home. Okay? And it's available for 2 hours. You can bring it back and check it back out again if no one else wants it. Okay, but there's a lot of textbooks there for you to look at. And I also have recordings from previous semesters there on CD. If you want to download, you can put that CD in a computer and drag and drop the files if you want. All right, so that's a possibility. All right, any questions so far on the syllabus? Yeah. Yeah, you're allowed to use your laptops. Depends on how loud your laptop is and how you use it. I know some people, when they type, they go and they make a lot of noise. Okay? So if you're really noisy, you might want to sit someplace where you won't be disturbing people. But usually, you know, if you don't make too much noise on the keyboard, it's okay. Okay? But don't be surfing during class. Okay? Make sure you're working your notes. And I'm going to put lecture notes on Blackboard so you'll be able to download it right into your computer, and it will be probably almost a paperless course for you, as well as the figures I'll have on there for the exam with all the labels erased off, so you can practice labeling at home. All right, will be exactly what's on the test. Okay. Oh, I should have had you start passing this out. Okay. One other little study thing. I don't know how many of you have actually taken a college course before. And you might not be familiar with how much you really should be studying outside of class, right, for a college level course. And usually we say it's 3 hours outside study for every 1 hour you spend in lecture. So how many hours of lecture do you get a week? You get 3 hours of lecture, okay, and it should be 3 hours outside for every hour in lecture, so that's what? That's 3 times 3, that's 9 hours. That's 9 hours studying during the week, okay? All right, so that's why I have that. What I'm passing out right now is a weekly study plan. And you should have about 17 of these when you're done with this particular class, one for every week that we're in class. And the first table you see up there is just something that I whipped up and I thought, well, maybe you would study during those times. All right, notice what's the maximum number of hours that I have there for you to study at one time?
One.
Yeah, I think it's maybe 1.5. Okay, but that's a total. That's a total for the day. One is the maximum. And that's because when we first start studying, that's when we learn the most. That's when our brain is very efficient. And if you study for longer periods of time, okay, our brains just don't learn as much. After about 1.5 hours, our brain is fatigued and it's almost a waste of time. So it's better to study for short periods of time, but a little bit more frequently. So I have 1 hour down there, but you could study for 2 1-hour sessions in a day. That's fine. With a break between them, that's excellent. And so that's why when you cram for a test, say you have a math test or something, and you start studying at 10 o'clock at night, and you study till 3 a.m. in the morning, and you get a lot of hours studying for that math test, and then you go take the math test, what happens? Well, you almost get like a 0 on the test because your brain just doesn't learn anything after a certain period of time. You don't have the recall to do that. All right, so break your study time into short periods. So on that first table, right at the beginning of the week, like tonight, I want you to fill in next in those places where you think you can study during the week. Is it Saturday morning or Sunday, right, or Monday? You know, maybe do at least 1/2 hour on some of these days. Okay, so that's your proposed schedule. And then as you go through the week, fill in the bottom table with exactly when you study. And that should total about 9 hours. All right, so if you want to then come and show me how you're doing, and because a lot of you guys are in here because you want to get a decent grade. You're not in here because you want to just kind of waste your time, right? So this is a little way that I can help analyze your performance, and if you need to study a little bit more, or change this when you're studying or how you're studying and what you're studying, this is one thing that would help me and also help you. Okay, so try to pay attention to that weekly study plan and see if your proposed schedule could match up at all to what you actually can accomplish, right? You might think at the beginning, well, I can study a lot on Wednesday, but then as it turns out, you can't study at all on Wednesday, right? You have to study Thursdays or something. And then so the next week, how should you fill in the proposed schedule? You know, on Thursdays, fill in time for Thursdays, okay, so that you get that study time in. Okay, so that's important. All right, last handout for today. I have these for the first 3 lectures or so. These are the text slides that I will use in class, so you don't have to write down every single, note. All right, everything I have on a slide for you. That's good for some students, that's bad for others. Some students learn a lot when they take notes. So if you're a student that learns a lot by taking notes, make sure you take a lot of notes and just don't watch me like you're watching TV, right? But if you're a kind of person that learns by listening, then don't write many notes, listen intently, right? Because a lot of times when a listening learner has to stop listening to write something on a piece of paper, then they miss what the instructor's saying. So this can help no matter what we're doing in class. After the first 3 lectures, then you will have to download these from Blackboard by yourself, unless you come talk to me one way or the other. I'll always have a couple laying around, but not enough for the whole class. All right, so that's some of the stuff that we're going to cover today. So, any questions? Yeah?
Will today's lecture be online?
It won't be online. Not before the quiz. But thanks for reminding me about that. When I get Blackboard running, I will send you an email. Okay, so that email address should be the same that you have in WebStar. So make sure that WebStar has a current and valid email address for you, and you'll start getting emails. I won't send a lot of stuff to you, but a few things. Okay, and if it doesn't work, then I can enter an email address for you in Blackboard myself on this computer here Thursday or next week sometime. Okay, and the password should be the same that's for WebStar too. Sometimes it doesn't transfer over. It all depends on how the computers are talking to each other that day. Okay, but when I get that up and going, I'll show you how to log in. It'll be real convenient for you to do that. Yeah?
Pretty much every week, are we going to get an updated study guide?
Like what I just passed out right here. Every lecture will have one, and I will give you the first three. And if you like to have these in class, then it will be on Blackboard, to where then you can go to Blackboard and print it out yourself. Or if you just work with it inside your computer, you don't even have to print it out. Yeah. Okay. That's good. All right, so let's get started with today's lecture, unless you have another question.
I'm going off this.
We're going off. Let's see, did I give you the right one? Module 1.
Yes.
Yeah. That's good. Here are some extras right here. It went click, 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 but no light. Okay, let's try this. All right, that's good. All right, so introduction to the human body. I see two terms up here, and are they on the screen? Yeah, they're on the screen. Good, I hope everybody can see that pretty well. And these two terms are anatomy and physiology. And so we have to know the definitions and appreciate what those two different terms mean. Anatomy is a scientific study of the structure of the human body. And so we're going to learn something about symmetry and certain body parts we have. Like, for instance, if I have five fingers on one side of my body, what have I got on the other side? I got five, right? So that's anatomy, right? Two eyeballs, that kind of stuff, about where they are located, right, in the front of my head. Right, that's anatomy, just the structure of the human body. So anatomy is a scientific study of how all these parts are related to each other and what part is next to what other part. And some of the parts are what? Muscles, some are bones, some are sensory organs like eyes. And we're going to look at all of those things in class. Physiology, on the other hand, is a scientific study of not the structure of the human body, but how it functions together, how all the different parts work together to give the human body a particular kind of function. So it's a much different kind of course of discipline, course of understanding. And anatomy pretty much is a prerequisite for understanding physiology. For instance, if we want to understand the physiology of the heart, and what does physiology of the heart mean? The function, which means what? How it pumps, how it's pumping blood, how it's producing pressure in our circulatory system. And in order to appreciate how the heart functions, we got to know what? We got to know, well, where it is in your body, okay? How is it made? What kind of chambers it has? What kind of valves it have? What kind of blood vessels are attached to it? And that's anatomy. So it's really hard. It's almost impossible to appreciate how the heart does its job or the physiology of the heart unless we really know the structure. And in this class, we actually study both of these together. Some classes separate these things out, like there are anatomy classes where you just study anatomy or you focus primarily on anatomy. Other classes focus pretty much on physiology, but in this class we kind of look at both at the same time. And that's real handy because there's always a nice relationship between the structure of something and its function. All right, so in order for you to understand how it is possible for you to write notes right now, which is a form of communication. Why is it possible that we have a written form of communication? What's the anatomy that allows us to do that? And not every animal can. Your cats and dogs at home can't do that because of the structure of our hand. in particular our thumb. Our thumb has a special kind of joint, a special kind of anatomy. We call that an opposing thumb, right? So that we can oppose our thumb with our other digits, and we have a special ability to grasp and manipulate fine instruments that not every kind of animal has. So there is always a relationship between anatomy and physiology that's special. Okay. All right, so when we think of the human body, it seems very, very complicated. And indeed, it is pretty complicated. Like, here is an illustration of the whole human body, and we're kind of focusing on all the muscles right here. But underneath all these muscles, we got what? Blood vessels and nerves and brain and sensory organs, digestive tract, and respiratory system. So it's pretty complicated. So when we're studying a very complicated, no matter if it's a human being or anything that's complicated, what's a good way that we can begin to study something that's complicated? Yeah, break it down into simpler pieces. And usually when we break something down from a complicated piece to a simpler piece, it gets smaller. All right, so the pieces that make something up that's big are smaller pieces. So an important theme in this class that I like to use is that of a building block. So this building right here, how did this building get here? Was there like a big truck that drove up and took the building off the truck and put it here? No. No, first a bunch of concrete came, right, and then pipes and then electrical wires. And all those things are building blocks for how to make this building. And then it was assembled. So what we're going to do with the human body is break it apart into pieces, especially small pieces, and then put these pieces together. And when we're done with the class, we can look at all those pieces put together and have a much better way to think of how your whole body is put together in terms of anatomy, but also in terms of physiology, how it functions together. Okay, so in order to understand a complex system such as a human being, it's best to break it down into simpler building blocks. So a lot of times I'm going to ask you, what's the building block of this, or what's the building block of that? And that will just enhance your appreciation for something that's a little bit more complicated. All right, so then your understanding of basic building blocks can be added together to form a more complete picture of the whole system. And I suppose you could even think of your own finances at home. How can you begin to appreciate a budget at home? What do? You start to break things down in smaller pieces. Well, I need this much for gasoline. Hopefully, that will be enough. Car insurance, right? Rent on a house, et cetera, et cetera. Books. How am I going to pay for books? So if you have something like your financial situation at home, a way to understand it is to break it down into smaller pieces, right? Okay, same thing for the human body. So we're going to start with the smallest kind of thing, and the smallest feature of the human body are what we call chemicals, right? These we can't see with the naked eye. So this is chemistry. So we're going to look at chemistry a little bit, because these are some of the basic building blocks of the human body. And I gave you some examples of chemicals. Here's one called adenosine triphosphate, and I'll show you how to analyze what that term means during this course. It's always abbreviated ATP. And maybe some of you have heard of ATP before. Does anybody know what ATP is good for? It's energy, that's right. It's what gives our body the ability to do things, to move and to think and to breathe. All right, so ATP is the important energy molecule in our body. That's like the gasoline in your car, if you're still driving a gasoline car. I am. I don't have an electric car. Okay, some of you might have a fancy electric car. And then there's other kinds of chemicals like calcium. Have you heard of calcium before? Bones, for instance. We're going to learn a lot about calcium. Na is sodium. This K right here stands for potassium. When we get to the chemistry chapter, we're going to learn a very short list of chemical names and the chemical symbol right here. It's easy to see that that means calcium. It's not so intuitive that Na stands for sodium. So a couple of these we're going to have to memorize. And cholesterol is important. Have you ever heard of cholesterol? Is it good or bad for you? All right. Yeah, it all depends. If you have the right amount, it's wonderful. If you have too much, it could be deadly. All right. And I say the right amount is wonderful because it helps build every cell in your body, and it's also a precursor for all your sex hormones. So you got to have it. Otherwise, you'd be completely asexual without cholesterol to make things like estrogen and testosterone. But too much plugs up your blood vessels. And what about H2O? That's a chemical formula. What does that H stand for? You might not know that. That's hydrogen. And that little 2 means there's 2 hydrogens, and that O is that oxygen. That's one of the elements that you have to know. And you put them together just like that, you got water, right? So you've all heard of water. So these are the basic building blocks of our body. And if we put a bunch of these different chemicals together, we get something more complicated. And the structure that we get when we put a bunch of these chemicals together is an organelle. Okay? And organelles can be found with inside a cell. The nucleus is a kind of organelle, rough endoplasmic reticulum, Golgi body, and they have their own particular shape, they have their own particular function, they're doing things inside of a cell, and we're going to learn what those functions and structures look like because it gives a cell a particular characteristic. So if we put some of these organelles together, what can we end up with? A cell. All right. So that's the next highest level building block, a cell. And a cell is a basic unit of life. So anything that's alive has to be made up of cells. That's right. And if it's not cellular in nature, it can't be alive. It might have a lot of properties that are similar to life, but it's really not alive. So one example would be a virus. A virus looks a lot like a cell, but it doesn't have organelles in it. Okay, it has just a little bit of DNA, and it has a little coat on the outside, but it really looks more like a crystal than a cell. So it's really not alive. It's not a living organism. So that's kind of an interesting problem, because if something's not alive, how can you kill it? Right? We don't know how to kill viruses. You can't kill a virus because it's not alive. So when you have a viral infection, is it a difficult thing to treat? Yeah, because you can't kill it because it's not alive. You have to come up with other kinds of techniques and tactics to protect your body from that virus. Right? So that's just sort of interesting. We'll learn some of these things in this class. If we put a bunch of cells together, right, then we call that a tissue. If all those cells kind of look the same and have the same kinds of organelles in the side of them and performing the same kind of function, we call that a tissue. And the nice thing about this is that the human being is made up of only 4 kinds of tissues. That's really nice and easy. And you can see that list right here. Epithelium, connective tissue, muscle tissue, and nervous tissue. And we got about a week, I think, to look at all those different things. All right, so I could ask you on the test, what's the building block of a tissue? A cell. Yeah, and then a good question would be, what's the building block of life? That's a cell. The building block of life is a cell. Okay? Then we can break things down farther and farther and farther. Okay. Now, if we can take a couple different tissues, like an epithelium and a muscle tissue, put them together, right, that's when we get an organ. So an organ is something in your body that has a couple different tissues coming together to perform a certain kind of function. Like, for instance, in your heart, you have connective tissue, and you have muscle tissue, and you have nervous tissue. Different kinds of tissues right there, all forming a unit that function to pump blood. That's what we call an organ. If it's just made up of one kind of tissue, then it can't be an organ. It's just a tissue. And if we take different organs and put them together, we get an organ system. For instance, if we take the heart along with the lungs, okay, then we get a nice organ system that's performing some kind of function, that's delivering oxygen and nutrients all over our body. And if we take all the organ systems in the body and put them together, then we get our whole self, right? That's the organism. So what's the building block of an organism?
Organ system.
What's the building block of an organ system?
An organ.
That would be an organ. And what's the building block of an organelle? That would be a chemical. Yeah, and ATP is just a nice specific example of a chemical. So here's a pretty nice chart that's in your book. Okay, and we'll start a little bit with atoms, but we're really interested in molecules. Right, so this just shows that hierarchy of how building blocks can be put together to form something a little bit more complicated. So chemicals can make organelles. Organelles can make cells, and we put a bunch of cells together, we get a tissue. And if we put different tissues together, we get an organ. And if we take a stomach with small intestine and large intestine and gallbladder and liver, these are all different organs, and put them together, we get an organ system. And this particular organ system would be called your digestive system, right? Okay. And if we take some other systems and put it together with the digestive system, like the respiratory system, the muscle system, right, the skeletal system, reproductive system, the nervous system. We put all those systems, organ systems together, what do we get? We get the organism. Right? So make sure you can go up and down through that hierarchy and know what the building block for each is, okay, according to this diagram right here. Okay, so you should be familiar with some of the organ systems that are in the body, and you have some, I think, some pretty good pictures in your book of various organ systems. So, for instance, and probably you should be able to name some organs that are in these organ systems. So where should we start? Let's start at the bottom. Reproductive system. Give me a name of an organ in your reproductive system. Testes. That's the male reproductive system. What about female?
Uterus.
Ovaries, right. Okay. Urinary system. Urinary bladder, right. Respiratory system. Lungs, trachea, things like that. Lymphatic system. Not many of you are familiar with lymphatic system, okay? But, for instance, your appendix is part of your lymphatic system. Lymph nodes, maybe you have swollen lymph nodes sometimes in your neck or your armpits, axilla region. That would be spleen. I think I heard somebody say spleen. That's part of the lymphatic system. What about cardiovascular system? Heart, blood vessels, like jugular, okay, in your neck. Now, here's one I like to test everybody on. Because guess what? Probably no one in here has ever heard of this term before. All right, so integument or integumentary system. What the heck is that one? That's the largest organ system in your body.
Oh, skin.
Yeah, skin as well as some hair. Accessory structures like hair, nails, that's part of your integument. Some glands, you got some sweat glands and oil glands. And you have hair, yeah, I mentioned that. And even a little muscle. The little muscle gives you goosebumps when you get cold. Okay, so it has different kinds of tissues coming together to form that system right there. Nervous system, what's a good example?
Brain.
Yeah, that's my favorite example. Okay, endocrine system, like thyroid gland, for instance. So it's going to be some kind of gland. A testes and ovary will also secrete hormones. The pancreas secretes some hormones. All right, we're going to learn a number of other organs that secrete hormones. Skeletal system. You might not have any examples on the tip of your tongue for skeletal system because we haven't studied bones yet. But there's a big bone in your arm called the humerus. Where's a bone that everybody might know? I don't know.
Tibia.
Femur. Femur is in your thigh. Okay, that's between your hip and your knee. That's a good one, a femur. Ulna is in your forearm. Okay, that's the one you bang all the time that makes your elbow right here. That's the ulna.
Funny bone.
Yeah, that's your funny bone. Digestive system, that's easy. Everybody knows some digestive system. I'll say one that's not so obvious. Liver, that's part of your digestive system. But stomach, small intestine, large intestine. And muscle. You might not know any names of muscles yet. Somebody might. Who knows the name of a muscle in your body? Sternocleidomastoid. Yeah, we're going to look at that one. That's a good one because it sounds really intimidating, but it's a really nice, easy muscle to know. When we go to nomenclature, you'll see that it makes perfect sense, and you'll be actually happy to see that one on the test. That's in your neck, the sternocleidomastoid. So after we learn bones, we'll look at some muscles and sternocleidomastoid. That's the one that allows you to move your head like this or move your head like that. Okay, so it's a pretty fun muscle, and you can see it on a lot of people too. All right, so those are some of the different organ systems in the body. All right, well, we sort of talked about this already, and that is, are you at room temperature? No, you're different than the environment. So means you're optimized. Your living processes are optimized to operate at a certain pH, a certain pressure, a certain temperature, and it's different than what we find in the environment. So how does the body maintain itself? How do you stay alive? And the way that we understand that is we say the body stays alive because it can maintain homeostasis. Homeostasis means staying the same. Your body temperature is staying the same, different than the environment. It's very rare that you're going to be in a room that's 98.8. It's going to be always hotter or colder, right, or when you're outside. So homeostasis is a condition in which body functions and even fluids and other factors of the internal environment, that means things happening inside you, are maintained within a range of values suitable to support life, that will keep you alive. So if your body temperature is 98.8, you can stay alive from the temperature standpoint. But for instance, if your body temperature goes too high, if it goes to, say, 105 or 106, what can happen? You can die. They call that hyperthermia. Or if your body temperature goes too low, like to 70 degrees, you'll die. What do we call that? That's hypothermia. So you can be hyperthermic or hypothermic. Hyper means above. Hypo means below. And so it's a job of your body, everything inside your body, to maintain your temperature in a normal state. Okay. So how do we maintain homeostasis? There are mechanisms that rely on feedback. And we're going to look at some of these mechanisms, but I want to define these two kinds of feedback right here. Negative feedback is some mechanism in your body by which any change from an ideal normal value is made smaller or resisted. So what does that mean? That means that if your body temperature is starting at normal, 98.8, and it starts to increase, 99, 100, 101, right? If something happens in your body to bring it back down to normal, what kind of feedback is operating? It is this negative feedback, right? So the change from an ideal value is made smaller or resisted. So as your body temperature goes up, a negative feedback mechanism will make it go back down to normal. And is that would you think that to be a healthy circumstance or an unhealthy one? That would be healthy because it brings your temperature back to normal. So even though this particular feedback mechanism we say negative, which sort of has kind of a bad connotation to it, negative feedback is really the good kind of feedback that produces a healthy situation inside your body. But there can be, under certain circumstances, positive feedback. Right? And positive feedback is some kind of mechanism inside your body by which any change from an ideal normal value is made greater. So let's talk about temperature again. Positive feedback would be a mechanism that, for instance, if your body temperature starts to increase, what would happen to your temperature if there was positive feedback? It says what? The value is made greater. That means your temperature would go higher. And if that positive feedback was still operating, what would happen to your temperature? It'd go higher. And if it was still operating, what would happen to your body temperature? It'd go higher and higher and higher and higher, and then what would happen? Well, we just explode into flames. Okay? That never quite happens. I'd be a little silly. But positive feedback drives you farther and farther and farther away from that normal operating mode or value. So positive feedback produces what we call a disease state. So positive feedback is not a good feedback to have, right? It's decompensating and produces disease. And if it persists, it won't cause just disease, it will cause what? Death, right? So the job of medicine is to make sure that these negative feedback mechanisms are working properly and are in balance, and then that brings health to your body. Okay, so that's important for homeostasis. This is sort of an interesting slide, I think. Maybe later on in the class I will talk about this particular slide right here. Okay. So when somebody's in a healthy, normal, physiologic state, how would you describe what's happening inside their body within one word? What's being maintained?
Homeostasis,
staying the same. Okay. And homeostasis, I want to just give you a little bit of a more sophisticated view of homeostasis. And let's just think about body temperature one more time. Say we had everybody come down and run up the stairs, okay, and then come back down, run down the stairs, and then run up the stairs again. What would happen to your body temperature? Would it stay right at 98.8 degrees?
No.
No. As soon as you start exercising, those muscles are going to produce heat. Your body temperature might go up to 99. I don't know. We could try this sometime. I'll bring in a thermometer if somebody wants to volunteer and see that their body temperature increases, okay? But what's going to happen as soon as your body temperature starts to increase? What's going to happen? You're going to start to perspire, right? And you're probably, your respiratory rate is going to increase. You'll lose heat by breathing, and you'll perspire. And as the sweat evaporates from your body, it's going to cool your body down, right? So that's what we call a negative feedback mechanism, because it's going to bring your body temperature back to normal. As well, as long as you are well hydrated, right? If you're low on fluids, you won't be able to do that. And that's actually how a lot of people die of heat stroke, okay, if they don't maintain fluid balance in their body when they're exercising strenuously, okay? So homeostasis doesn't mean that your body stays exactly at 98.8 every second of your life. It says that it can increase a little bit, but then as it starts to increase, other things in your body are going to change. Like, what's going to change? Your sweat glands will be activated, and you'll lose fluid from your body, and that will cause your temperature to go back down. So what homeostasis means is that that your body temperature can fluctuate, but it will fluctuate only a little bit. So homeostasis doesn't mean exactly flat. It means little variations. And everything in your body will work together to produce little variations so that nothing changes a lot. So your temperature doesn't change a lot. Your fluid balance doesn't change a lot. The pH, the measure of acidity in your body, doesn't change a lot. Everything is changing a little bit over time. So I kind of think of homeostasis as more of a dance of physiology inside your body that is maintaining your life. It's not absolutely constant. So that's what homeostasis is. But we'll talk about that a lot in this class. All right, well, let's go to anatomy a little bit. These are easy things to appreciate. And the first topic is anatomic position. And we have to know what position a human body should be in when we say, well, how are we going to get from somebody's elbow to their belly button? Okay, it might be different, right, if your arm is like this, or if your arm is like this, or if your arm is like this, right, you have to get different directions. So we want to define what a standard position a human body should be so that when we say go from one place to another, we know how to get there. Okay. So anatomic position is when somebody's standing on the ground with their feet flat on the ground, facing forward, arms down by their sides, like this. Not really in a relaxed position, because when you're in a relaxed position, which way are my thumbs pointing? Toward the inside of my body, right? That's really not anatomical position. Anatomic position means the thumbs have to be pointing to the outside, like this. So now I am in anatomic position, with my thumbs pointing to the outside of my body, like that. That's anatomic position. Facing forward, head erect, right? My neck not bent or anything like that. That's anatomic position. And I'm sure you have a really good picture in your book regarding anatomic position. If I could just give you a quick little quiz right here. Is this person in anatomic position?
Yes.
Yeah, each one is, right? Because their thumbs are pointing outward like that. Okay, directional terms. We have to know what sides of the body are called what. The front side is called anterior. It is also, and on the back side, that's posterior. So anterior, posterior, that's pretty easy. Sometimes some people use different names. Anterior can be the same as ventral. And the backside some t- times can be called dorsal. And we use those terms interchangeably in anatomy class. I don't know if I do in here, but I might, so refer to this lecture to remember that they're the same. Okay, so here's a sign-in sheet. Thank you so much. Anybody else need this sign-in sheet?
Right.
Yeah. If not, make sure you come after class and sign it. All right, superior and inferior. Anything that's toward the head is superior. Anything that's toward your feet is inferior. So something toward the top of your body in anatomical position is superior. Anything to the bottom is what we call inferior, right? So it doesn't have any connotation of better or worse or anything. It just means in terms of location. And when we use these directional terms, we always use two anatomical structures. We just can't say, well, the belly button is... Well, let's see, let's think. Another way of talking about this is, say, your hips right here. You can't say your hips are anterior, or you can't say your hips are superior. This is a better one. You can't say your hips are superior, okay, because your hips are actually inferior to what? Your eyes, your nose, your lips, your chin, but your hips are superior to what? Your knee, your ankle, your toes. So when we use these terms, we always say the structure compared to some other structure. So it's a relative definition between two structures. Okay. All right, so my chin is superior to my knee. Okay. Cranial and caudal sort of make sense. They're very similar to superior and inferior. Your cranium is your head. So anything that is toward your head is cranial, and caudal is kind of a funny term. We use it a lot in other kinds of animal descriptions, not so much in humans. Caudal means toward the tail, which usually kind of means what? Inferior. So cranial means toward your head, caudal means toward your tail or your tailbone. The next term, medial and lateral. If you think of a midline running right through your body, right between your eyes, right smack in the middle, right down through your nasal septum, between your two front teeth, through your belly button. That's a nice midline. Anything that's close to that midline is what we call medial. Anything that's far away from that midline is what we call lateral. So, for instance, let's work a couple examples. How about my nose? How is my nose compared to my ear? My nose is medial compared to my ear. Or I could say, what is my ear compared to my nose?
Lateral.
Yeah, my ear is lateral compared to my nose. It's farther away from midline. Mm-hmm. Okay. Or you could say nose and eye. My eyes are lateral compared to my nose. Okay, something like that. You have teeth. You have some teeth that are medial. You got some that are lateral, more lateral than others. Okay. Which finger is the most lateral? So what do you have? What's the first thing you have to do? Think of the human body how? In anatomical position. And so which digit, which finger is the most lateral? The thumb. So the thumb is lateral compared to the little finger, or you could say the little finger is medial to the thumb. So those are some ways to think about medial and lateral. Proximal and distal, that's probably the hardest one to appreciate, proximal and distal, but we'll go over it right now. Again, if you think of some middle location in your body, actually some center location in your body, something that's located very close to that center location is what we call proximal. Something that's attached to your body farther away, we call that distal. So, for instance, if we think of two parts of your arm, here is your arm between your shoulder and your elbow, and another part of this appendage is between your elbow and your wrist. Right between you, this is what we call the forearm, this is what we call the arm. The forearm is what compared to the arm? The forearm is distal, farther away from some center attachment point to your body. The arm is proximal. A lot of times we need to count somebody's heart rate. And to do that, we feel somebody's pulse. And we can do that with a central pulse in their neck, but more commonly, we use a distal pulse. Distal means what?
Away from.
farther away, and where is that? That's way down here in your wrist. That's a nice distal pulse, and that's why we call that a distal pulse, because it's farther away from some center location where you could take somebody's pulse. Superficial and deep refer to organs, and all organs are not the same on the surface compared to how they are on the inside. The brain is different on the surface compared to how it is on the inside. So the surface part of an organ is what we call the superficial part. And the part that's on the inside is what we call the deep part. So superficial means right more on the surface. The deep means more interior. So deep kind of makes sense. Superficial is not intuitive. Superficial means on the surface. Superficial and deep. So we could say the heart is what compared to the integument? The heart is, in terms of superficial and deep. It's deep. Yeah. Or you could say the integument is superficial to what? Just about everything else in your body, right? Okay, especially, yeah, that's right. Okay, so those are some nice directional terms. Okay, body planes. How many dimensions are there in space? How many dimensions are in our universe? Spatial dimensions. Okay, unless you get into quantum physics or something. But what are there ways that you can move around in the room? You could go right and left, forwards and backwards, and I wish I could do this better, up and down, right? So there are three dimensions. You can go right, left, forwards and backwards, or up and down. And if you go at some angle, that's just some combination of those basic three kinds of planes, okay? So there are three dimensions. So there are three planes that we can use to investigate the body. One has to do with right and left, the other is up and down, and the other is forwards and backwards, right? And these three body planes, the first one right here is called sagittal. So what does a sagittal plane look like? A sagittal plane, here it is. I showed you already. A sagittal plane is going to separate the body into two parts, a right part and a left part. So sagittal plane is going to look like this. Right, it's going to separate my left part from my body from my right part. But that sagittal plane, I guess I'll use this piece of paper because it's easier to see. Here's a sagittal plane. We can slide it over to the left, right? We can separate my left arm from the rest of my body, or it could be right in the middle, or we could slide it all the way over here and separate my right thumb from the rest of my body. That's still a sagittal plane, so it can slide back and forth, right and left, right? The plane that's right in the middle, right here, is what we call the mid-sagittal plane. It's special. Because usually if we have something on the right side of our body, we got it on our left. Not in every particular case, but that is mostly true. So this one right here looks like it's right smack in the middle. So this one maybe I would even call mid-sagittal plane. That's really the only one that has a special name, the one that's right smack in the middle. All right, the one plane that can separate a superior part from an inferior part, a plane that can separate, for instance, my head from the rest of my body, that's called transverse. We don't have a special name for a transverse because nowhere could you put a transverse plane and have that part, that body duplicated on the other side. Okay, because we're just different as we go from cranial, okay, down to our feet over here. So transverse separates superior from inferior part. And then the last one is the coronal plane. Sometimes we call it a frontal plane. And that will separate an anterior part from a posterior part of your body. So coronal. How would you have to hold this piece of paper to do a coronal? Like this. So a coronal plane could chop off the very tip of my nose and separate it from the rest of my body. Or it could be where? Right smack in the middle of my head. Those are all interesting planes to look at depending on what anatomy you're interested in. Okay, so mid-sagittal is what? The sagittal plane that's right smack in the middle. Sometimes a transverse plane is also called a cross-sectional plane. It'll give you a nice cross-section of what you're looking at. Body regions. Well, we all know where our head is. It's superior to our neck. Okay, our neck is between our head and our shoulders. The trunk. Where's somebody's trunk? Okay, the trunk is below the neck, down to the hips. All right, so here is the trunk right here, minus any appendages like our arms. Okay, or legs. Yeah, our arms and legs don't make up the trunk. So here is the trunk right here. Okay, and parts of the trunk will be the thorax, which contains the lungs. And what else do we have? Abdomen, which is a cavity right over here, and a pelvic cavity, which is inferior to the abdominal cavity. I'm going to go over this diagram in just a little bit. But here are the terms that I want you to be aware of. It's a little bit tricky right here. In terms of the limbs, which is different than the trunk, right, the appendages, we have upper appendage, like this right here. And what is a proper name for this part of the upper appendage between the elbow and the wrist? Okay? You might say, well, gee whiz, that's your arm. But in proper anatomic language, that's really not your arm. That's what we call your forearm. So the part of your upper appendage between your elbow and your shoulder, that's really your arm, just that part. So your upper appendage is made up of your arm, your forearm, your wrist, and your hand. Okay, so don't use forearm and arm interchangeably in anatomy because it just won't work. Even a little bit more confusing is your lower appendage. Okay, so what does it look like I'm pointing at right here? Okay. Okay, it looks like I'm pointing to my leg, but that's not my leg. Between your hip and your knee is called your thigh. So that's your thigh. And between your knee and your ankle, that's your leg. So your leg is inferior to your thigh. So it's strange, right? Okay. It's a little bit strange that way. Some body cavities. And this is probably the last stuff that we're going to look at today. Okay, so you can fill in this little chart right here. But I'm just going to go directly to the figure. Okay, so there are some cavities in the posterior part of your body. We call that the dorsal cavity. And so here's a dorsal cavity. And a cavity can be broken down into even smaller cavities, some building blocks for larger cavities. So the dorsal this is the dorsal cavity because it's on the posterior or dorsal side of our body. In that dorsal cavity, we have the brain and we have the spinal cord. And they are in their own cavity. So the brain is in what we call the cranial cavity, and the spinal cord is in what we call the vertebral cavity. So I could ask you, what are the building blocks of the dorsal cavity? You would say cranial and vertebral. Okay. There are also some other cavities that are in your anterior, more anterior part of your body, or ventral part of your body. And these are big cavities. This one right here contains your lungs and heart. That's in your thorax. We call that the thoracic cavity. The thoracic cavity stops right here at this very important muscle that's necessary for breathing. We call that the diaphragm. So the diaphragm is necessary for breathing. And that delineates or separates the thoracic cavity from the abdominal cavity. And in the abdominal cavity, you have things like stomach and intestines, liver, things like that. And when you go even more inferior within that same cavity, you get down inside the hip bones. We don't call that the abdominal cavity anymore. We call that the pelvic cavity. But there's really nothing nice that separates abdominal from pelvic cavity like the diaphragm does compared to the thoracic and abdominal cavity. We just know that this is a cavity, and some organs actually go between. They start in the abdominal cavity, go into the pelvic cavity, and go back up into the abdominal cavity. Others are in the pelvic cavity all by themselves. Like, for instance, urinary bladder, uterus, vagina, things like that are in the pelvic cavity. And because the abdominal cavity and pelvic cavity are connected, sometimes we actually talk about that as one cavity. And we call that the abdominopelvic cavity because they really are sort of like one. So in anatomy, we can take two separate words that mean different things, but if they are associated with each other, like abdominal cavity, and pelvic cavity. We can put them together and create one word that we can use to describe those cavities as long as we put another vowel between them, that little O. So, for instance, abdominopelvic cavity means what? Abdominal plus pelvic cavity together, you might want to talk about something like that. For instance, if you have a ruptured appendix and you have a inflammation in this whole area right here, that would be what? That would be you're interested in the abdominal pelvic cavity because the infection went everywhere in there, right? Not just in the abdominal cavity. Okay, so some cavities are made up of other kinds of cavities inside the body. And furthermore, this could maybe be on a test or the quiz coming up. So this view, let's see, what kind of imaging plane was used to show you this view right here? Would that be a transverse plane, or a coronal plane, or a sagittal plane?
Sagittal.
Remember, coronal separates anterior from posterior. Transverse, superior from inferior. So here's sagittal, right? Gives us a nice lateral view. Now what kind of plane would give us this view?
Coronal.
That would be coronal or the frontal plane. So if we look at this frontal projection, we can see the nice abdominal cavity and pelvic cavity right here coming together to form the abdominal pelvic. That's a nice review. But I want to focus your attention on this area right here of the thorax. The thoracic cavity is made up of some other cavities that you have to be aware of. The lungs we find in the thoracic cavity here and here. They're more lateral. So we call the cavities that the lungs are in the pleural cavity. And there is a left pleural cavity and a right pleural cavity because you have a left lung and a right lung. And your heart, it's in the thoracic cavity, but it's also in its own special little cavity. We call that the pericardial cavity. Pericardial. That's a cavity that's surrounding the heart. Sometimes we call the heart the myocardium. That's where that cardial comes from. You hear cardiac or cardial, you should think of heart. All right, so that's the heart. And then there are some big blood vessels that come off the base of the heart, like the aorta, vena cava, big, huge blood vessels. So the heart and these blood vessels form a cavity, are inside a cavity all unto themselves. And that cavity is real important. It has a name. We call that the mediastinum. So the mediastinum is a cavity that separates the right and left pleural cavities. And people use that term mediastinum all the time because we might have a newborn baby that's cyanotic, that has a blue cast to them, and we're very interested to see what kind of heart defects they have or defects in these blood vessels that are attaching to the heart, and we want to get some very nice images of the mediastinum to see what that newborn baby's heart looks like in all those blood vessels. But you got to know what mediastinum means, right? It's that very center cavity that contains the heart and these blood vessels right here. So I usually have that on the test. What's another word I usually have on the test that you've never heard of until you've come to this class? That organ system. Yeah. Integument. So mediastinum, make sure you know where that is, and the integument, where that is. All right. Your body has some other minor kind of cavities, like your oral cavity you're aware of, your nasal cavity you use for breathing. You have some big, thick bones in your skull, and your head would be really, really heavy, so they're kind of hollowed out. There's cavities inside those bones, and we call those sinuses, paranasal sinuses, and some bones up over here. So you have different kinds, some smaller cavities in your body, but the ones I really want you to know are on these two figures. So I'm sure this one right here is an exam figure. Make sure you can label that. So on an exam, you'll have this figure with nothing labeled, and then there's going to be a list of these terms, and you're going to have to match. Well, A goes to that line, B goes to that line, or whatever. Okay? You know what? This is from a really old edition. I've got 1.7B, but I... 1.8 in the new edition. Okay. So on the syllabus, I have the figures for the new edition. Okay. These are the correct figure numbers right here. Okay. So next time, what do you have to do for next time?
Go
You've got to bring in a Scantron, a pencil, and a really good eraser. Check out that eraser first. And get ready for that quiz on chapter one. And that quiz is going to come from where?
Workbook.
You can
workbook.
That workbook. But what part of the workbook? I didn't tell you. Okay, I didn't tell you exactly what part. There's a lot of parts for every chapter. Write this down before you go. It's called the mastery test section. The mastery tests are the multiple choice. Mastery test. The mastery test section only. All the things in the workbook are real handy, but that's where I'm just going to take those questions right out of the workbook. So if you spend some time working on those, you can start getting some 100% for your grade in here. And the other thing probably I would like for you to do is to fill out your weekly study plan. And if you want to show me on Thursday, that would be great.
It's the same thing. No,
there's some things that change a little bit. Okay, so I'm going to turn off my microphone right now. Yeah, question.
We have problems with every last semester when the